You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
I was not one of the stars you'd see in the front two rows of the briefing room. I was in the back of the room or standing in the aisles before I got a seat. It was not fake news. It was my life. I get up in the morning and see what the most powerful man in the world wrote on Twitter overnight or blurted out during a call-in to a morning news show. Then try to make sense of it all.
That is Deborah J. Saunders, host of the brand new podcast, Trailing Trump, Notes from the Back of the Briefing Room. Longtime listeners of the show remember Deborah as a former columnist from San Francisco Chronicle, White House correspondent for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. She's now got a column on Substack, etc. Deborah J. Saunders, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine. I have Alexa on the background, and it won't go off. There's not much I can do about it. I'm going to go unplug it, actually.
I'm going to prank order a bunch of dog food. All right, go unplug it. Do you seriously have to? Go ahead. And then I've got to tell her.
I truly apologize.
Oh, don't worry about it.
I'm living in a world ruled by AI.
So speaking of electronic devices, I dove into your podcast yesterday, and I love it. I can't wait to continue. If you're a news junkie at all, it's just so much fun to hear the inside story of the briefing room and the press briefings and being a White House correspondent and everything. So I'm really, really enjoying it. Well done.
Well, thank you. I wanted to tell the story about what it was like to cover the Trump White House. You know, all these other people, they write books, you know, the palace intrigues, and some chief of staff will trash another staffer, and they do all that other stuff. And, it's not like they were all coming to leak to me, right? And I don't really care about palace intrigues, but I did want to get the story of covering Donald Trump. It was a fascinating time. And I thought it would be interesting for people just to know what it was like to be there in the back of the room as a regional reporter. And it was a great experience. I've really had a blast going through my past to write this.
I know. I remember, though, from when you were doing it, it was really tiring.
It was exhausting. I was so burned out after 4 years, I have to tell you. But, you know, when you look back on it, I'll say one thing. Covering the Trump White House is way better in the rearview mirror. When you're It just is. Because at the time, you have no idea what's going on. You're getting up. I'm sleeping with my phone, seeing what the tweets are going to be. You just have no idea what's going to happen. And on the one hand, you know, as a journalist, it was great because you always had a story. Like, it was handed to you on a platter every day, right? But at the other hand, you also never knew what was going to be next. So, anyway, this is my way of, you know, we all watch the briefings. You know, your listeners are news junkies too, right? And we, you know, you know what's going on. But this is peeling back the curtain and explaining a lot of the things that happen. Anyway, it's been fun. I feel so lucky that I got to cover the White House.
Right, sure. You know, I had forgotten that you had covered the White House for the entire 4 years. So, I mean, you were there for Sean Spicer and Sarah Huckabee Sanders and everybody in that post, right?
Yeah, Stephanie Grisham, who never gave a briefing.
Right.
Stanley McEnany, all four press secretaries. I was there for all four chiefs of staff, two attorneys general. I mean, there was the turnover thing was just amazing to watch. There's a woman named Katie Tempest. She's with Brookings, and she keeps a track of, you know, basically the Trump turnover, and it was off the charts. She had to develop a new lexicon for it, like serial turnover. You know, normally you'd have an attorney general for 2 years, maybe one, but usually 2 years in the beginning, right? And all that other stuff. But with Trump, I mean, his first chief of staff didn't last a year. And same with his first press secretary. So it was really chaotic. And I think that Trump became so much of the story because you never knew what was going to happen next.
Right. So tell us about the relationship with the press secretary. What's the stuff we don't see on camera? I mean, do you spend time in their offices? Do you communicate a fair amount with them? How's that work?
Well, you know, I'll tell you something sort of funny that I didn't put in the podcast, and I realized I probably should have. You really work at getting to know everybody in the press office. So when you look at the podium in the briefing room and you see that little door, you've seen them come in and out of it all the time.
Sure.
That goes to the lower press office. And then you go up a few stairs and there's the upper press office. And so I tried to, you know, basically get to know everybody everywhere. And, you know, a lot of people, a lot of reporters brought food.
Like to give them?
Like I'd walk in. I did it too. I mean, what was I going to do? Let the big papers do it, and I'm too good for that. So, I mean, there were all sorts of things that people did to ingratiate themselves. You know, well, you still want to do. You're not ingratiating yourself by doing something that you shouldn't do as a journalist, but you can. You know, you can. I've taken to people to lunch or a cup of coffee, and so you can bring dessert one day or something like that. I've seen people baked brownies. Reporters baked brownies.
Wow.
Because just as a way to show, hey, we're people and, you know, we're going to do our jobs, but we see you as human beings.
Right, which I think is fine. I mean, I've got to admit my initial reaction was a little discomfort in terms of, you know, since you're supposed to be the, you know, the loyal opposition, the questioner, the holder to account, that sort of thing. But I suppose you probably knew some of these people from their work in the media at times in the past or not.
So I worked as a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle for 24 years. If I needed information, I would call the governor's office. I'd call, you know, various elected officials, various departments. People called me back or they didn't, but I could always find somebody to talk to me, right? But the Trump White House is very different. For one thing, these were not, for the most part, people I knew. There are very few people I had known that had any association with the administration. They were Trump loyalists. Mm-hmm. So unless you covered the campaign, traveling with the campaign, the chances are you didn't know any of these people, or if you were from New York. So you really had to work to make sure that people saw you so that they would answer your questions when you needed them answered. And, you know, most of the press stuff, again, I'm writing a story, let's say, about Yucca Mountain. Most of the stuff that I'm getting is not in the briefing. I'm getting it through, calling people, reading documents, things like that. So anyway, you just have to work that much harder. And because they weren't, if this were the George W. Bush administration, they all knew me. But these people, in the very beginning especially, they were new. Mm-hmm. And they were not used to dealing with it. I mean, imagine you're a 23-year-old who worked on the Trump campaign, and boom, you get a job as an assistant press secretary, deputy press secretary, and you're working in lower press office. It's just, it was new to them, too. It was new to me. I'd never covered a White House before like this. I mean, I dealt with White Houses for years, but not in this kind of proximity. And the other thing is, you're writing about California government, there are all sorts of different sources. But the White House, it's like this little bottleneck. And so you have to spend a lot of time really battling for access. And that's one of the things that's what one of the episodes is about, is the battle for access in a very competitive environment.
Deborah J. Saunders, cover the White House for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Her new podcast is Trailing Trump, Notes from the Back of the Briefing Room. You mentioned that you are actually a standing room person till you got a seat. Did Sean Spicer boot some people out or what? How'd you end up getting the seat finally? How does that work?
Well, so I thought in the beginning that the White House decided who sat where. So there were 49 seats in the briefing room, but the White House Correspondents Association assigned seats. And it's based on the size of your readership or viewership. Obviously, it helps be a member of the WHCA and be there and work that. I had to elbow my way to get a seat. And first, I got a rotation for a seat through the Regional Reporters Association. And when you think about it, by the way, you want to have a group like the White House Correspondents Association decide who sits there. Because if you just leave it up to an administration, well, you know, they're going to pick favorites.
Sure. Of course.
Right? The press secretary can choose who they're going to call on, but obviously that's the kind of access you have. So I had to work on that. I started pooling in part so that I could have more access and be more likely to be called on and basically, when you do that kind of work, you're going to be in a better position for getting a seat in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I stood for a long time, then I shared a seat, and I shared a seat through the end.
Wow, do you have to sit on somebody's lap? Because that's improper.
Well, in the beginning, I mean, you're standing there and you see all these people working. But basically, by the end, of course, there was COVID. There were 49 seats in the room, but only 14 were being used. And they didn't want people to come in and stand. Remember Chanel from OAN? She'd stand in the back.
Oh, yeah.
And she'd be there at all. Remember her? Yeah. So she stood in the back because she was given a seat in rotation like everyone else, but she wanted to be there more often. And basically, apparently the Trump people sort of said, we'll call on you, but she couldn't stand in the side because that was against the WHCA rules. So she stood behind there.
Wow. Okay. All right. So in the 2 minutes we have left, barely, are you comfortable? Let me just hit you with various press secretaries you're dealt with or Biden people, and just give me a few words, just an impression. Is that okay?
Well, you know what? Asking me to pick my favorite press secretary, it's like asking a jailer to pick their an inmate to pick their favorite jailer. I don't want to go there. I mean, I appreciated every bit of access I had, and that's where my mind is concentrated.
All right, fair enough then. Well, let's skip to the Biden administration. Jen Psaki made me insane because she was so good at deflecting, and I often disagree with the Biden administration. It strikes me KJP's maybe in over her head a little bit. Would you agree, or what's your impression?
Well, there are people in the press room who are furious right now at the way that the press office. So we know that there are 49 people in the briefing room, right? 49 mm-hmm. seats. But there's an event in the East Room. That's a big room. There's no reason why they have to limit who gets in there. And that's the same for in the Rose Garden. But apparently, the Biden White House basically tries to keep it really small, and they just let the pool in for this stuff. So, you know, when you'll see Biden in the East Room, and it's that huge room, and then you'll see the press back at the end of the room, and there'll be maybe 12 to 20 people. They're basically cherry picking who gets to call them. Peter Ducey asked tough questions, but it limits the number of people who might do that.
Interesting. Deborah J. Saunders' brand new podcast is Trailing Trump, Notes from the Back of the Briefing Room. It's really good, really interesting. We'll have a link at armstrongandgetty.com so you can find it easily. Deborah, great to talk to you. It's been too long. I'm sorry we're out of time, but thanks a million for the time.
Joe, I love listening to the show, so thank you for having me.
You're too kind. And by the way, thank you so much for the kindness you extended to my daughter, who was kind of learning the ropes in D.C. back in the day. Very sweet of you.
Yes.
Thanks.
I recall.
All right. Thank you very much. Deborah J. Saunders, and I'm telling you, I'm not blowing smoke anywhere. I can't wait to get back to the podcast. It's such a great insider account. Much more to come, including Kamala Harris swinging and missing at softball practice with CNN, among other things. Don't go away.
Show.
Hunter Biden's laptop continues to be a wealth of information, strangeness, porn. Goodness knows what else. It's the Pandora's box of bad behavior. But one of the things that's emerged in recent days is a voicemail from his papa, Joseph R. Biden of Delaware, which we will play for you, then explain the significance of.
Hey, pal, it's Dad. It's 8:15 on Wednesday night. If you get a chance, give me a call. Nothing urgent. Just want to talk to you. I thought the article, at least the thing on online, it's going to be printed tomorrow in the Times, was good. I think you're clear. And anyway, if you get a chance, give me a call. I love you.
So an article that was released online, going to be printed tomorrow in the New York Times, was good. I think you're clear. Interesting for a couple of different reasons. First of all, Joe Biden has claimed repeatedly he's never discussed his son's overseas businesses with him. I think that is a ridiculous claim. Utterly false. I think he's the big guy. I think he gets a percentage. I think he sold influence and access through his son and his brother, Jim. And I think there's more and more proof of that. But here's the context. That was from December 12, 2018. That was after he left the vice presidency and before he started to run for president, which is absolutely true. And so he is allowed to talk to his son's business dealings, talk about them to his son, unless there's something weird going on. And why deny that? It seems odd, but I'm sorry. So the context is the story was about this Chinese businessman, Patrick Ho, who was arrested at JFK on bribery charges. Okay, that's the news story that they were talking about that I think you're clear. The trouble was that Ho's first call after his arrest at JFK was to Joe's brother, Jim Biden, Hunter's uncle, and the New York Times found out somehow. So again, this guy gets arrested at JFK. He gets a phone call. He calls Jim Biden, Hunter's uncle. Ho had called Jim to try to track down Hunter, who he had paid $1 million legal retainer for just this sort of circumstance. That's a hell of a lot of money, especially because there's no evidence that Hunter did much legal work from Ho apart from calling in another attorney. So this Chinese businessman who Hunter was doing business with paid Hunter $1 million for calling another attorney to deal with his actual problem. This Mr. Ho worked for CEFC, the Chinese energy company, which Hunter, Joe, Jim, and partners entered into a multi-million dollar joint partnership with. Now, Joe was slated to get 10% for the big guy from the deal. That's where that quote came from. That's an email on Hunter's laptop. That's the one Tony Bobulinski, their former partner, spoke about. And nobody has discredited him to this day where he said, oh, yeah, the big guy was Joe Biden. We were told to never specifically refer to him or talk about his presence at a meeting or that sort of thing. In 2017, CEFC had brokered China's biggest ever investment in Russia, a $9 billion acquisition of the Russian state oil giant Rosneft, which would have signaled a tectonic shift in geopolitical power. The deal fell through after Ho's arrest later that year. Text messages on his laptop show Hunter Biden panicking when the Times started asking questions about Ho's involvement with the Bidens. Old man Biden called his son and he said, I think you're clear. Maybe this doesn't mean anything. Joe Biden's done. He's a lame duck. He's not running again. But they were selling an influence, running an influence racket, rather. That's utterly clear. I don't think there's any denying it at this point.
Armstrong and Getty.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
So Jack is off for a couple of days. He's with his family in the mountains of Arizona, which if you've never been there, it's just so wonderful. Judy and the kids and I were visiting my parents in the Phoenix area and decided to make the trek to the Grand Canyon because I can't remember if Jude had ever been there, but I'd never been there. And the kids had never been there. And so we headed up north. And it's a heck of a drive. It's longish, but boy, I had no idea. I mean, I'd heard of towns like Flagstaff, for instance, and what's the other big one there? Everybody talks about
Phoenix.
No, in the mountains. Phoenix is most definitely not in the mountains. But anyway, it was just striking how pretty it is up there, and it gets cold at night in the summertime and cool in the daytime. And anyway, so I hope they're having a good time. He'll be back, I think, on Thursday. Anyway. So there I was on the elliptical yesterday, getting my sweat on, trying to get slightly less fat and get my heart and lungs working so they don't take me before my time. And I decided to watch Jake Tapper's show, break a lead story, I guess, with Jake Tapper. And some gal was filling in for him. And she was terrible. But the big feature that they kept touting was that Dana Bash of CNN, who's a flaming lefty, was going to be interviewing Kamala Harris. About the Roe v. Wade decision. And I thought, oh, man, okay, well, I probably ought to listen to this. Number one, because I'm sure she's going to bring the thunder. And number two, because, you know, maybe it'd be good tape for the show and we can use it. So I'll just, I'll go ahead and listen to it. And it started, and it was just amazing how bad she was. How an incredibly friendly interviewer set up like an expert volleyball player made a perfect set hanging right on the edge of the net. And all Kamala had to do was jump up and spike it, but she's just completely unable. Listen to the vacuousness. It's as if she only knows, like, I don't know. She's only got like 5 or 6 words she can use to describe what went on with the Supreme Court. So Dana Bash, let me set up the first clip, Michael, which will be 31. And Dana Bash, as I recall, asks her, how did you find out about the decision and what was your reaction? Go ahead.
You know, it's one thing when you know something's going to happen. It's another thing when it actually happens. And I just actually turned to CNN and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it because they actually did it. And here's what they did. The court actually took a constitutional right that has been recognized for half a century and took it from the women of America. That's shocking when you think about it, in terms of what that means, in terms of democratic principles, in terms of the ideals upon which we were founded, about liberty, about freedom.
Okay, that kind of sounds like an eighth grader faking a report up, but and we skipped over, and part of me wishes we hadn't, but when Dana Bash teed up the answer originally, the first thing Kamala did was she led off with this long description of how she was on Air Force 2 flying to Aurora, Illinois to talk about maternal health with someone named Lauren Underwood, who's apparently a member of Congress and chair of the Judiciary Committee, Dick Durbin, blah, blah, blah. She went on for 45 seconds about being on the plane and who was on the plane until she said anything about Roe v. Wade when Dana Bash kind of got her back on track. So then finally, at the end of the clip we played, she gets to, well, they took away a freedom, which is in terms of taking away freedom, shocking, because we're based on freedom. Again, like an eighth grader faking their way through an oral report. And then she unleashed this gem. Dana Bash asked her, so what did you think of the ruling? And she hit us with 32.
You know, I thought about it as, you know, a parent. We have 2 children who are in their 20s, a son and a daughter. I thought about it as a godparent of teenagers. I thought of it as an aunt of preschool children.
And a woman yourself.
And a woman myself. And the daughter of a woman. And a granddaughter of a woman.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Kyle Smith wrote a pretty good piece in the New York Post talking about activists must have been grinding their teeth waiting for Harris to get angry. And when she finally did get around to her feelings on Roe, gently coached by Bash to remember she is a woman, Harris almost got stuck in an infinite regression of the concept as a woman myself and a daughter of a woman and a granddaughter of a woman. What an odd tangent to go off on. And because, you know, this is radio and you can't see the video, she was doing that nod as she laid this stuff on us. Wow, that is so weird, because, you know, unless it's perhaps it isn't obvious to you, are you a woman? Then you're the daughter of a woman and the granddaughter of a woman. And I would hazard a guess to say you're probably even the great-granddaughter of a woman, or multiple women, for that matter. So that was a weird thing to go off on. That reminds me of the, we will work together to work together while working together thing. She just gets stuck in a weird, weird way. Why don't we skip ahead to clip number 36, Michael? Oh, she's talking about Clarence Thomas, I believe.
And the way that this decision has come down has been so driven, I think, by the politics of the issue versus what should be the values that we place on on freedom and liberty in our country, right? The right to privacy. Let's think of this in the context of the laws that are being passed in states.
So she knows that's not true, if she knows anything, just because... Yeah, I mean, like Brett Kavanaugh, we mentioned earlier on the show today, he maintained a laser-like focus on what he sees as the justice's limited role in answering the question before them in that case, the Dobbs case that overturned Roe. He said, and I quote, "The issue before this court is not the policy or morality of abortion. The issue before this court is what the Constitution says about abortion. The Constitution is neutral and leaves the issue for the people and their elected representatives to resolve through the democratic process in the states or Congress, like the numerous other difficult questions of American social and economic policy that the Constitution does not address. Because the Constitution is neutral on the issue of abortion, this court also must be scrupulously neutral. The 9 unelected members of this court do not possess the constitutional authority to override the democratic process and to decree either a pro-life or a pro-choice abortion policy for all 330 million people in the United States." And that is the point that you're never going to hear anybody on the left concede or even admit to. Not only did they say, we can't decide this, the previous court shouldn't have decided it, they said that, they didn't even come close to saying you can't have an abortion. Not even close. They said, we don't have the authority to tell you that. We wouldn't dare. Whereas the previous court had, in a Supreme Court decision that read much, much more like a law, like a statute, had gone on at quite a bit of length and drawn up a chart and when you could have an abortion and when you can't. With the possible, well, no, not even Clarence Thomas. There was nobody on the court who said you can't have an abortion. Quite the contrary. Kevin Williamson actually wrote a really good piece in the National Review. He's a man whose fingers do not get tired typing. I'll just say that. And his stuff, and he has a lot of thoughts, and his stuff is fairly long, but I thought he wrote a really good piece about the uses and abuses of quote-unquote democracy. And he talks about, he points out how often you hear them shouting about democracy, or the decline of democracy, or a crisis in our democracy, or we're going to lose our democracy, or whatever else. I mean, AOC is big on this. And he writes, "Thanks to 5 decades worth of work by legal reformers and pro-life activists, the Supreme Court has taken the purportedly radical step of deciding that, henceforth, abortion laws will be made by lawmakers in their legislatures rather than by judges in their chambers. That return to democracy has, of course, been lamented as announcing a crisis of our democracy, as well as heralding a declining democracy, according to cute Instagram influencer AOC, those are my words, not Kevin. That assault on democracy, a very, very weird assault on democracy, isn't it? That consists of asking people to vote on a contested political issue through their elected representatives. That makes of these United States a cautionary tale, according to the analysts over the Washington Post, the sometimes daft pages of which offer a helpful reminder that the first word in analyst is anal." I'm not sure why he had to throw that in. But the very cranks who have their self-serious little slogan, "Democracy dies in darkness," every time you go to the WAPO.com, they're calling it a cautionary tale and scary that we might lose our democracy because the justices said, hey, unelected justices shouldn't be deciding this in our chambers. Y'all should be voting on it. That's a crisis in democracy? Boy, that's some funky, funky reasoning, huh? Do they actually believe that? You know, I wonder if they probably do. As I often tell Jack, ideology can neutralize common sense and blind smart people. It happens all the time. But, man, that is a funny crisis for a democracy to have. More voting and more deciding by the legislature of issues. We'll finish strong in moments. Stay with us.
Armstrong and Getty.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Cleaning out the basement. I've got some of my childhood boxes out here, and my daughter says this. What did you just ask me?
It looks like some ancient history storyteller.
Ancient history. This is a cassette tape. So this is how we used to listen to music and how we recorded music from the radio. This is how we saved Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
You're dead serious. You don't know what this is.
No. It looks like you shake it or something.
No, it probably has all my favorite songs from the radio.
You, like, pull it or something?
No, you have to put it in the cassette player.
So what do you put them in?
So that is a mom explaining to her daughter cassettes and that sort of thing. That's cute and kind of sweet. Although, honestly, how would you explain a CD to somebody? I could actually explain a vinyl record pretty effectively, I think, although it still astounds me that it works as well as it does. The needle vibrates and turns that into electrical pulses that then vibrate a speaker and they sound exactly like the music on the record. How's that? How can that be? But anyway, that was cute and sweet. Looked like some sort of ancient storyteller or something else. Anyway, you know, as long as I'm looking at the sound list, Michael, occasionally for the Armstrong and Getty One More Thing podcast, we'll do something called Cleaning Out the Sound Fridge.
Cleaning out the sound fridge.
Because the guys do a lot of great work bringing us audio for the show, and sometimes you don't get to all of it. I'm looking at the list. How's that, the Wimbledon player and the ball boy fainting? Is that pretty good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'll play it for you.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
What's going on here?
Oh, dear.
A ball boy who just needs a little bit of attention.
Oh, well done, Jodie, for doing that.
Yeah, unfortunately, one of the ball boys felt really faint, and I had tried to supply him with Powerade. I was really looking for some sweets at the side of the court. getting that sugar in him, a minute or two passed, and he actually felt a lot better.
Oh, so a ball boy was about to pass out at Wimbledon. One of the players ministered to him. That's nice. Her name is Jodie Burridge. I'm not much of a tennis fan, so I wouldn't know if she's, you know, top two in the world or an unknown, but that was very sweet of her. Let's go, as long as we're cleaning out the sound fridge, Michael, this is Rudy Giuliani talking about allegedly being assaulted in a store the other day.
I got hit on the back as if a boulder hit me. He is lucky that he didn't knock me down, and I hit my skull and died or got a concussion or got seriously injured.
He's lucky he didn't die. Yeah, I saw the security video of that, and it just looks like somebody patting somebody else on the back. I watched it three times because I kept thinking I'd missed it. But then I realized, oh no, that was it. On the other hand, I guess you can't. It's hard to tell exactly with how much force somebody hits somebody or pats somebody. But Rudy has continued his journey toward, I would just say, wackiness. So this is not wacky. This is serious. How much time do we have before final thoughts, Michael?
We got about a minute 30.
Oh, a minute 30. Okay, not much time. So I'll just have to summarize this real quickly, but maybe we can put a link at armstrongandgetty.com. And Jack and I talked about this very, very briefly, but several reporters for the New York Times did this big report on the Chinese government, how it's surveilling its citizen. And it is so crazy. As in wild and scary and 21st century, they're using big data to predict and prevent everything from pickpocketing to political protests. People who've committed crimes get extra scrutiny with the facial recognition and their cell phone chips and everything. The government always knows where you are all the time. But so do mentally ill people get more scrutiny. Young people without jobs, minorities, people with HIV. What? Anyone the government deems a potential disruption. And these three reporters report for the New York Times on how the systems, which are partly based on technology developed in the U.S. and Europe, how they function. Quote, with a simple fill-in-the-blank menu, the police can base alarms on specific parameters, including where a blacklisted person appears, when the person moves around, whether he or she meets with other blacklisted people, the frequency of certain activities. The police could set the system to send a warning each time two people with a history of drug use check into the same hotel, or when four people with a history of protest enter the same park. Wow, now that's a surveillance state. That is wild. Your Chinas and North Koreas will lead the way, certainly. But your so-called liberal democracies probably won't be very far behind. And we'll have to fight tooth and nail to have this invade our societies, too. And you know what their plea will be. You know what their claim will be. We're doing it for your safety. Gotta keep you safe.
Admit me, chorus to this history. Who, prologue-like, your humble patience pray, gently to hear, kindly to judge, the final thoughts of Armstrong and Getty.
Thank you, Mr. Fancy Pants. Hey, let's get a final thought from everybody on the crew to wrap up the show for the day. Michelangelo, our fine technical director, leading us off. Michael, final thought?
Yeah, we're just about a week away from 4th of July, and it always brings back my greatest childhood memory when somebody handed me an entire brick of firecrackers. They said, now be careful with these. And of course, as a child, instead of breaking them up, I just lit the whole brick. And, they went off for about, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 minutes as adults ran scattering, you know?
Huh, that's great, man. Firecrackers, I remember that. Can't do it anymore, because why? It's dangerous. Too dangerous. Young Alex is our behind-the-scenes producer. Alex, a final thought for us.
I have a bone to pick with some Twitter users. Over the weekend, Sir Paul McCartney performed at the Glastonbury Festival in England, and people complained online that he didn't play enough Beatles songs. Sir Paul McCartney is 80 years old. He performed 38 songs that night. 10 of them were Beatles songs. He even brought out Bruce Springsteen and Dave Grohl. Appreciate our rock stars now.
Yeah, wow. People, well, of course, if you have a bone to pick with Twitter, welcome to humanity. It's awful. It's bone picking almost entirely. My final thought is, you know, just to echo the editorial by Kevin Williamson, the idea that berobed judges saying, no, y'all need to vote on this, is not a threat to democracy. It's a reaffirmation of democracy. The problem with Roe v. Wade from the beginning was that it usurped the role of Congress and of the state houses of America, and a bunch of judges started writing laws willy-nilly. You got to stop it. There are more big Supreme Court cases to come out this week and probably just this week, so we'll keep an eye on them and bring them to you. Armstrong and Getty wrapping up another grueling four-hour workday. So many people to thank. Go to armstrongandgetty.com. A lot of good stuff for you there, including the hot links. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless America.
Armstrong and Getty.
They're way better at words.
Bad words.
Oh, my word.
Words.
In the context of the fact that they suggest that, such as the what this actually, and I couldn't believe it.
But it's also a bob. It's a bobcat is the thing.
A, anyway. A bobcat!
Squirrel!
It's true.
Thank you all, and as always, f*** everybody else.
I love you.
On that high note, thank you all very much.
Armstrong and Getty.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.